Hey there, sex fans, welcome back. Today is Wednesday, December 9th, 2009, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge, with your host, Dr. Dick. That's me.
I'm telling you, you're messing up the story. Now get it right.
Keep your shirt on, little fella. Today, I bring you the very last word in the Sex Education podcast series for 2009. We'll be back with a slew of other prominent educators, practitioners, and advocates of unconventional sexual expressions the very first Wednesday of the new year. But in the meantime, we're going to go out with a bang. The brilliant and oh-so-charming Andrea Zanin is back with us to conclude the chat we began last week. You didn't miss part one of this insightful conversation, did you? If you snooze, you lose. Actually, that's not completely true, because all of my podcasts are archived on my site. Use the site's search function, type in podcast number 172, and voila! Just remember to include the pound sign when you do your search.
Is this a kissing book?
I don't think so. Well, wait a minute. Maybe it is. Anyhow, just stay tuned and you're going to figure it out all on your own. Listen, for more of Andrea, check out her website, sexgeek.wordpress.com. Today's podcast sponsor is the holiday sale at Eden Fantasies. If you're looking for a unique and thoughtful holiday gift, may I suggest that you consider a quality pleasure product from Eden Fantasies to make the season bright. In these tough economic times, none of us has money to burn, and we're all trying to get as much bang for the buck, right? Well, that's why I want you to consider a gift that will keep on giving throughout the new year. And this is where Eden Fantasies comes in. They go out of their way to bring you an astonishing assortment of adult products. And just in time for holiday shopping, they have a huge sale going on. Save 25% on vibrators, 20% on luxury items, 15% on silicone toys, and there's even stocking stuffers for under $20. And since a lot of you turn to me for gift-giving ideas, I'd like to turn your attention to a product line that is getting an amazing amount of buzz these days. It's the Exhale Glass Company. And Eden Fantasies has a wide assortment of exquisite erotic art insertables from these master artisans to choose from.
What is this? Are you trying to trick me? Where's the sports?
I'm sure they're going to come up soon. Listen, if you are unfamiliar with the beauty and versatility of glass toys, you ought to discover what you've been missing. We've reviewed 3 Exhale products on my site, and you can find our comments by doing a search using the word Exhale. That's X-H-A-L-E. And you can also find these stunning art pieces and reviews on EdenFantasies.com by searching their site using the same word, Exhale, X-H-A-L-E. Finally, our friends at Eden Fantasies want to remind you of their 3F shipping commitment, fast, free, and fabulous. That's right, fast, free, standard shipping on any order over $59. But why fabulous, you might ask? Well, that has to do with the Eden Fantasy shipping department, which is comprised of the hunkiest men in internet shipping. So if you want your goods handled by a big, handsome, masculine, muscular brute, shop Eden Fantasies today.
Hey! Hello in there! Hey, what's so important? What you got here that's worth living for?
Well, there's a lot of things, including this show, so let's get on with it. Welcome back, Andrea, and thank you again for joining us for another week. I want to pick up exactly where we left off. Last week, we were talking mostly about power play, power exchange, BDSM, and the like. And this week, I would like to go to the other topic that you write prolifically about, and that is polyamory.
Indeed.
Good. Could we start with a working definition? What is polyamory?
Ah, here we go. It's all about the semantics. Okay, so polyamory. Polyamory literally means many loves. Mm-hmm. So it's important to distinguish this from polygamy, which means many marriages, because it is entirely possible to be polyamorous without ever being married, mm-hmm. Just as it's entirely possible to be polygamous without ever being in love.
Oh, that's so true.
Yeah. So polyamory specifically is a type of relationship formation in which the purpose is to have multiple loving relationships. There are certainly lots of people who sort of call themselves poly and who are actually really interested in getting laid a whole lot and not necessarily having multiple love relationships, and I think that's just fine. So let me put it out there that there's sort of like this weird distinction that happens sometimes in cyberspace and discussions here and there where people are sort of like, well, poly is not about sex. Swinging is about sex. And
right.
That's not true. Poly people like to get laid too.
A lot.
Yeah, bring it on. I think that the difference is that in certain types of non-monogamous relationships that are not polyamorous, what you have is people who are in a love relationship with one person and then aim to have sort of recreational sex with others.
Right.
And they might not call that polyamory, which,
right.
You know, for good reason, because that's not what they're after.
Right.
Make no mistake about it. Poly people like to get laid.
You are self-identifying as poly, yes?
Yes, I am a polyamorous person for sure. I also am certainly somebody who, let's put it this way, I don't have to be in love before I'm going to go to bed with somebody. I am a sex-loving polyamorous person who may do all kinds of things that aren't necessarily just about the amory part.
Right.
There we go.
So how long have you identified yourself as poly?
Oh gee, probably about 8 or 9 years now,
wow.
Give or take. I'm just trying to think back here. I started to use that word for myself when I finally had a partner who sort of just got it. You know,
mm-hmm.
Prior to that, I would certainly have identified as poly had I known what it was.
Right.
But I was too busy trying to respect my monogamous arrangements with people.
Right. Do you find that? This is less of a, how do I want to say this, a less of a discussion point for gay and lesbian people than it is for straight folk?
Well then, that's a good one. I think that, it's interesting, I actually co-authored a paper with my former lover and good friend Pepper Mint, who's a San Francisco poly person, on exactly this topic, and he came up with a brilliant theory about, what did he call it, cliff theory, I think it was. It was kind of like once you've already done one of these things, it makes you abnormal in the view of
right.
a lot of sort of mainstream sexual,
right.
you know, ideas.
Yeah.
It's sort of like now you've jumped off the cliff. You might as well just do all the rest, right?
Right. Right.
That's not entirely true. There are tons of people out there who are, for example, gay or lesbian, but who are very committed to monogamous relationships and a monogamous lifestyle, and lots of people who are poly who are straight, you know, so you can't just you can't just overlap them and say they're all one thing. They're really not.
Right.
But I do think that there's a certain degree of openness in the gay and lesbian or queer, trans, bi, et cetera, community, to the possibility of living relationships in a way that falls outside the dominant norm, well, precisely because for the vast majority of history, our relationships haven't even been accepted in the dominant norm, so we kind of haven't had a choice, you know?
Yeah.
This whole marriage thing is a bit of an anomaly, historically speaking.
Oh, yeah, yes. I
want
to get to that in a second. But I just, thinking back, I was not too long ago talked with Cunning Minx from Poly Weekly. And one of the things that I've noticed about my own life, you know, I've had numerous partners and, you know, deep abiding relationships with several different people at the same time. And, you know, I never identified myself as poly, mostly because I didn't know what it was back then. And now, you know, if I would do that, and I have in some respects to other, you know, gay men that I know of my age group, and they said that they respond like, well, isn't that basically a heterosexual word? So, I mean, that's the only reason that I ask that. I mean, it's a curious thing. So, and the same kind of thing was, you know, I've interviewed several, you know, swingers in this series, and a lot of them, you know, have said things, you know, like, I said, you know, swinging is a predominantly heterosexual, you know, phenomenon, because, you know, gay and lesbian people have been having multiple partners, you know, for a long time, and we just never gave it a term.
Right.
Came to me. Like, oh,
right.
This is just being queer, period. So, and have a nice day.
Well,
do we
said.
Need to put another name on this?
Yeah. Yeah,
so,
no, it's true.
Yeah. You said something very interesting that I wanted to pick up, and you said it just a moment ago, and that is about monogamy being a relative newcomer to the way human relationships have developed, and yet it has somehow become the norm. And why is that, do you suppose?
That's interesting. I don't think that's what I was saying, but
oh.
but I think you're probably right nonetheless. I think that, I mean, oh boy, I mean, I'm not going to pretend to be able to give you a history of human relationship
types, but
what I would say, what I would say is that I think that we have a certain, a social and economic system that's really invested in the heterosexual monogamous reproductive pair.
Right.
And I mean, that's got to do with, you know, religious values, and that's got to do with capitalism, and that's got to do with sort of a maintenance of a cohesive sense of safety, and so on and so forth. And I mean, it has to do, you know, I mean, in the past, it's been sort of have to do with property rights and inheritance and so on and so forth. I mean, there's a lot wrapped up in what we
right.
understand. Like, we
right.
sort of like to think of marriage as being this, like, thing that's all about true love. It's not about true love. It's about a hell of a lot more than just that.
Yeah, right.
And when you do it, you're buying into a whole lot more than just, you know, a white dress and a wedding cake. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, that historically speaking, I don't think I'm qualified to give you, a list of the many, many other ways that this has taken place,
mm-hmm.
but I can certainly tell you that it's not a neutral thing to be doing now.
Yes.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it seems to me that, I mean, in the sweep of human history, monogamy appears later in human history than, let's say, multiple partners and, extended families and, you know,
mm-hmm.
all that kind of stuff. And it just seems odd to me that all of a sudden, you know, it has become this monolithic kind of, you know, now everyone is grasping, even, you know, gay and lesbian folks. I mean, I'm all in favor of the rights thing kind of stuff, but, you know, tying oneself down to, you know, a particular kind of expression is just seems really odd to me, but
mm-hmm.
that's...
Oh,
that's
yeah,
me.
For sure. Yeah, and I mean, I read a great little article today by Marcus McCann, who is the managing editor of Capital Extra in Ottawa and Extra in Toronto, which is the paper that I write for, among others. And he wrote something about sort of basically if we have a view of rights that are all about equality, then we are taking a whole lot of issues off the table,
mm-hmm.
because as long as we've basically said, okay, the norm is fine, all we want to do is we want to buy into it.
Mm-hmm.
And we want you to take away the barriers that prevent us from buying into it. Then that's great, because you may achieve that aim, which, you know, certainly at least in Canada on some levels queer folks have. But you're not challenging what the norm is.
Yes.
So it depends on what your priority is.
Yeah.
And it's understandable for some people that their priority would be buying into the norm. But historically speaking, for queer folks, that hasn't necessarily been the priority, or it's
yeah.
been one of several priorities, many of which involve things like, you know, rights for sex workers and,
right.
you know, the right to not have our sexuality criminalized
right.
and, you know, our material seized at the border and our forms of expression censored and so on and so forth, you know, so.
Besides, you know, I mean, the norm seems awfully stultifying to even, you know, a lot of the
yes.
ostensibly heterosexual, you know, vanilla folk out there that, you know, so that's not
don't
something
tell
that
anybody
I want to. I don't want to buy into that. I don't want to promote that. I don't want to lend support to it. So, and if that's
yes.
if that's the only vehicle to being, you know, to getting visitation rights to see my lover in the ER, then that's a conundrum for me.
You know, and it's kind of like, don't tell anybody, you know, hush, it's the big secret. The system doesn't work. Like,
not even for you.
It doesn't work for you either, yeah. You know, and I mean, it's this sort of grand illusion that it does, and I think, you know, it's very rare the people for whom it actually really does all the way, all the time. And I mean, the vast majority of people, even those who don't claim any kind of alternative sexual identity, are definitely left out of that system and most of the benefits that it provides, right?
Right.
You know, either the straight-up emotional benefits of what they expect monogamy to be and what it turns out not to be a lot of the time, you know, but even beyond that, I mean, the idea that we're going to have a marriage with one person till death do us part, I mean, you know, how many women are in the poorhouse because they just expected their husband was going to provide for them forever, you know, how many, you know, people are lonely because they invested everything in a relationship and then the person left them when they were 60, like what, like, it doesn't work for everybody, you know? There's got to be some sort of vision that goes beyond the couple in terms of what it means to build family and community, for sure.
And it's funny because, I mean, we have so much more latitude in terms of how we involve ourselves with other people in terms of who we socialize with and how we socialize with them. But, you know, again, like we talked about last week, if you introduce, you know, the dynamic of genitals and or pleasure, then somehow, you know, all bets are off.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So I, you know, I can have this wonderful round of friends, and, you know, I can have the girls' club, and, you know, we can do all this social, but we can't.
God forbid you should fuck them. God forbid.
And he does, basically. So there you have it. So there you go. Would you say that poly attitudes about poly have changed over the recent years?
Well, that's interesting. That's kind of a question that we're looking at right now in Canada. It'll be very interesting to see if that's true or not. I think that the knowledge of the existence of polyamory is reasonably new in the media, and generally speaking, you know, there are certainly messages out there that from people who think that this is very negative. Mm-hmm. But I've also seen a ton of coverage that's actually It's more sort of just curious, you know? It's like there's, and I mean, sometimes that's good, and sometimes it's just about the titillation factor, which isn't always a good thing, but I would say that there's certainly a lot of curiosity about the topic, and there's certainly a lot of interest and a lot of discussion, and I mean, it's a word that I think people might know now in a way that they might not have known 15 or 20 years ago. Does that mean that attitudes have really changed? I'm not sure. I think that there might be, at least on some level, the attitude of, oh, well, whatever works for you is pretty much okay. At least, and again, I'm speaking from a Canadian perspective, right? Like, this is quite different from what I understand in some areas of the States.
You think?
Yes, indeed.
What's wrong with
us? Yes, I do.
What's wrong with us?
Listen, okay, to me, the States consist of New York, Boston, and San Francisco, okay? The rest, I don't
even include Seattle in that, because...
No, and I'm being nasty, because I actually do include Seattle. I've had some great times there, but... but yeah, it's
that
it's
makes
sort of
one of us, but never mind.
Seattle's wonderful. I like it. It's very hilly and very rainy, but it's lovely.
Mm-hmm. And it's doing that right now, don't you know?
Oh, I bet it is. I just bet. but yeah, so I mean, it's I think that, so there's definitely conversations happening about polyamory and leeway being made for it. Now, does that mean that that actually will translate into things like, for example, legal rights, or at the very least, the right to be legally left the hell alone? I don't know. I mean, there's a case in the court system right now in BC dealing with a polygamous community named Bountiful in British Columbia, which is really probably going to be groundbreaking in terms of the acceptance of multiple relationships in some sort of legal fashion. I don't know what to expect with that. It's kind of too early to say. But
is
I'm really hoping...
It's not religious-based polygamy?
Well, that just is. It is.
It is.
Case in Bountiful is, and it looks like there's actually some call for polyamorous people who do not approach non-monogamy from a religious perspective to step forward and testify in this case to make sure that nothing gets written into law that would erode the rights or damage the freedoms of polyamorous people to do what they choose to do, right? Sort of, you don't want to throw the baby with the bathwater. I mean, and, you know, to be honest, I don't understand why anyone would enact a law against polygamy, even religious polygamy. I think we've got laws on the books against pretty much all of the things that polygamy the grounds upon which polygamy is problematic, such as, you know, child abuse and forced marriage and all of these other things, we got laws against those already. Let's just use them. I'm not sure why the multiple marriage thing per se is everyone's getting all excited about it. It's sort of like, leave that one alone, and let's focus on the abuse, because that's happening.
Yes.
I mean, you know, you'd be a fool to try and say
happen,
it's not.
You know, in traditional marriage, too, so...
Absolutely. Goodness. Absolutely. So it's a little puzzling. Like, I'm not sure why the legal sort of folks are even focusing on that, but, I mean, if they have to, okay, let's just make sure they don't do a crap job of dealing with, you know, the rest of us. But at the same time, I'm also not willing to say that all religious polygamy is necessarily bad. I would be willing to bet that, you know, 98% of it in the case of, in many cases is, just from context alone. But, you know, I don't know. There's always the one you haven't thought about, right? Or there's always the exception. And if you put a rule into place that hurts that person, then I don't know. Not cool.
Yeah. So here's a trick question. Like all
Can't
the other
wait.
Ones. My perspective has been that most of the polyamorous folks that I know seem to be more highly evolved in terms of other aspects of human sexual expression. Lots of poly people, including yourself, I'm assuming, are included in other alternative sexual expressions like BDSM, power play, to mention a couple prominent ones. Is there, in your mind, a causal connection here between polyamorous and other
other
more
sexual minorities.
Gotta
back to the cliff theory here. Yes and no. I think that it's a mistake to say that because you're poly, you're more evolved. I think that that's a really big problem, and I think that it's one of these statements that that some poly people might make as a form of defense against the fact that a whole lot of the world would like to sort of call them sick and disgusting and greedy and diseased and immoral and all of whatever else you can throw at somebody who does something different than you. And I think that it's unfortunate when people sort of try to say, you know, it's not just that we are, you know, live and let live, it's we're actually better than you. So, you know, poo on you.
Yeah.
I don't buy it. I don't think I'm better than other people because I'm making different choices.
Mm-hmm.
I don't particularly like that line of argumentation. Are poly people sort of probably more open to other alternative forms of living and doing relationships and having sex? Yeah, probably. Why? Just by sheer dint of exposure.
Yeah.
But that doesn't, again, that doesn't necessarily mean by any stretch that all poly people are going to be kinky or that all poly people are going to be queer or anything.
Right.
I think that there's, if there's a causal relationship, it's not in the nature of the sexual difference. It's in the question of what communities expose you to what type of new thought.
Exactly. Good.
You know?
Good.
So. Good.
So let's talk about coming out as poly or kinky, for that matter. Any advice for those who are making their first tentative steps out of the closet?
Oh, boy. Well, I don't know. What does your closet look like? I think the question of coming out is such a loaded one, because coming out to who?
Yes.
And, I mean, who put you there in the first place? And you know, I don't know. Like, I mean, I think that the whole idea of the closet has a set of assumptions underneath it, which is that, number one, everyone is the same in the first place, such that it's up to people who are different to then demonstrate their difference.
Yeah.
And that places a whole lot of responsibility on the people who are different. And it places no responsibility on the quote-unquote normals to actually open their eyes a little bit.
Right.
And ask some interesting questions and be open to those answers, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the closet metaphor, I don't know, it's starting to wear a little bit thin for me.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, then there's the question of, when are you all the way out? Like, I mean, I'm on a Bloody podcast. I use my name and my face in my writing. I'm as out as I can be. And there are still people in the world who don't know anything about what I do and who I am.
Yeah.
What do I need to do in order to come out? Like, what is the next step? Do I tattoo it on my forehead? Do I, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Like, exactly that.
So, I mean, right, I like my forehead the way it is. so, I mean, it's the question of, you know, what degree of coming out do you want? And to whom is it necessary for you to come out? And to whom is it a bad idea for you to come out? And how much of that is about you being afraid of things that aren't really going to happen? And how much of it is you being afraid of things that very well might happen? And
right.
What real consequences are you dealing with? And
right.
What might you lose and what might you gain? And don't let people sit there and tell you that because you're not absolutely out screaming it from the rooftops to everybody you know that somehow you're a coward or a traitor to the cause. You're not. You know, we have our self-preservation to think of, and the world is not always kind.
Yes.
So, I don't know. I mean, you know, do what you need to do that makes you feel you can sleep at night. Mm-hmm. I think that, that would be my, and I happen to feel like I can't sleep at night unless unless I'm all the way out all the time to everybody. But yeah. I can afford to do that because I'm self-employed. I don't have any kids.
Yes.
You know, my family either likes who I am already or doesn't, and that me coming out isn't going to change it. And you know what I mean? There's a certain degree of privilege in there, and not everyone has that privilege. So I am not going to sit there and tell you that you're a loser if you can't do what I do, you know?
Most people have difficulty navigating monogamy or sexual exclusivity. Polyamory seems to multiply the difficulties. Is that true?
Well, I think it multiplies everything.
Uh-huh.
I think it's kind of interesting. Of all people, my osteopath, who's a wonderful lady, when we were talking about relationships at one point, she says, you know, I really admire what you do. And I was like, why is that? And she said, well, and this was actually, she just said it so well. She said, because, she goes, I've been in a relationship with one person for 20 years, and it has been the most challenging thing of my life. It has forced me to look at my demons and see all of the things about myself I don't like and do all the hard work I didn't want to do. And she goes, I can't even imagine what that would be like to try and do it with more than one person at once.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, that would just kill me. I just couldn't do it. And I was like, you know, okay, I can respect that.
Yeah.
I get it, you know?
Yeah.
Kudos to you, lady. But that's sort of, I mean, it depends on how much it would cost you to be monogamous, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, the difficulty or the challenge of maintaining and being healthy and whole and happy in multiple relationships is might be high, but if it would be more difficult for you to commit yourself to one person and deal with the restrictions that that imposes, then it doesn't feel like poly is hard. You know what I mean?
I understand completely. Absolutely. I feel the same way. Absolutely. Right. I mean, if it's such a struggle, you know, in your monogamous relationship, isn't it time to take a look at, you know, why it's such a struggle?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I mean, I think relationships are hard, period. And it doesn't sometimes...
Yeah.
You know, even an occasional, like, geez, one of the most challenging relationships I've had is with somebody that I was actually with for 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's you know, given rise to years of figuring shit out and processing and reconnecting and then disconnecting and then, do you know what I mean? And,
yes.
And then I've had, you know, relationships that have been solid for 5, 6, 7 years.
Yeah.
And I'm not necessarily talking romantic ones where we are so committed and we do the work and it's wonderful, and their family, you know? So, yeah, I don't know. I don't think the poly thing itself is the source of challenge. I think it's relationships that are the source of challenge.
Right.
Yeah.
In the little time that we have left, I'd like to turn our attention to one area of special interest to me as a therapist. And I hear from kinksters and pervs, as well as your run-of-the-mill gay and lesbian folk, that they are often frustrated in their search for sex-positive and kink-positive healing and helping professionals. I suppose that you're equally attuned to this pressing concern?
I get that question a lot, actually, yeah. And I mean, it's a doozy. It's a real doozy.
Oh, say.
Because so many people want to take elements of who you are and what you do that in and of themselves are not problematic, and they want to treat them as though they were the presenting issue. And
right.
So many people want to pathologize sexual minorities. And I mean, it's really difficult to find, you know, a compatible therapist ever, period.
Yes.
Never mind finding one that's compatible with you in these particular ways.
Yeah.
And
or at least has an open mind, for goodness sake.
Oh, sure. Well, and even that brings up other issues. Like, how much do you want to be paying your therapist to educate them
exactly.
about how to be open-minded about
thank
what you need
for
to
that.
Talk to them about?
Yes,
like,
absolutely.
You know, I know that Patrick Califia has a really great ethic around these things, where he talks about if he's going to do therapy for a community, for somebody who's a member of a community where he doesn't feel he has strong cultural competency, he won't charge them for the first few sessions because he's learning so much that he doesn't feel
right in
taking their money.
Right.
I would love for all therapists to be that.
Oh, wouldn't that be grand?
Yeah, you know, not to mention to, you know, stop buying into outdated standards of what mental health really means. But you know, like, that'll be my next project. I'll just reform all therapists. How's that?
Good idea. And, you know, I'm going to join you in that effort because, boy, the yahoos that I see sometimes.
Yeah.
Or what's worse is, you know, the leftovers. What, you know, I have clients that come to me that have been in therapy with other therapists for years and years and, you know, it's dumb striking. You know, how could they? Anyhow, never mind.
Yeah, you have to do. I mean, your work ends up being fixing them from the damage that the other therapists done.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think if there were a message to send out there about this, it would just be that you have a right to culturally competent care if you're somebody who requires that sort of help, and don't be shy to keep fucking looking until you find it, and don't be shy to ask around and.
Yeah.
Ask the community if they can provide referrals, because a lot of people can, and you know, ask, look into options like looking for people who are culturally competent therapists who are willing to do work for you online or via Skype or telephone, or you know,
The non-traditional models don't necessarily serve non-traditional communities.
Yeah.
Or traditional models don't.
Traditional
serve,
models,
don't
serve. Absolutely.
Right, good.
Absolutely.
That pretty much winds up our time, even though I have a whole lot more stuff that I could, you know, spend time with you on. I'm afraid that this is it, at least for this session. Could I ask you again to give us your website address and walk us around a bit before we conclude?
Certainly, absolutely. So you can find me at sexgeek.wordpress.com. There's lots of blog material, blog content in there. I'm a little prolific, I've been told. So, you know, have some fun with that if you're interested. And then I've got a Poly Resources and a Kink Resources page, which can point you in some interesting directions if you're doing some exploring. And then I've got a little section that talks about what I do and who I am. And then there's also a listing of my upcoming speaking engagements and various things of that sort. So, it's all there. It's pretty straightforward stuff, but it would be lovely to see you there.
Good. And we should have our audience say hello, and that they met you on Dr. Dick's Sex Advice.
Oh, by all means.
Good. Andrea, thank you again so much for your generous time. It's been absolutely wonderful, and we are the richer for the experience.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been lots of fun to chat.
Be well.
Cheers, you too.
Well, that's it for today, sex fans. I'm so glad you could join me. Tune in next Monday, December 14th, for the last show of the year and more Sex Advice with the Nedge, with your host, me, Dr. Dick.
Look who knows so much, eh?
Yep, that would be me. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is the holiday sale at Eden Fantasies. Listen up, you guys. Eden Fantasies provides you a unique opportunity to both shop and educate yourself about the amazing array of adult products out there. Of course, they uphold a high standard of quality in the toys they carry, but they are also focused on customer service and consumer education, which makes Eden Fantasies, to my mind, the very best place to shop on the net. Place your orders by this time next week to be assured of ground delivery by Christmas. I also want to turn your attention to Eden Fantasies' brilliant new e-magazine, Sex Is. You'll find tantalizing articles and informed opinions on sex, society, health, erotica, and humor. And you'll even get tips on how to green your sex life. And just in case you don't get a big enough dose of Dr. Dick here on DrDickSexAdvice.com, you'll find that I have a weekly column at Sex Is, too. It's called Dr. Dick on Demand. Look for the Sex Is banner in the sidebar of my site.
So bow down to her if you want. Bow to her. Bow to the queen of slime, the queen of filth, the queen of putrescence.
Well, you got the queen part right anyhow. I don't know about the other stuff. That's a little harsh. One final thing. I want to take a moment to invite you to check out my product review site, DrDickSexToyReviews.com. That's right, sex fans. Now you can see what's hot and what's not in adult products. And you'll find reviews of all sorts of adult goodies. Sex toys for sure, but also condoms, lubes, fetish gear, as well as educational and enrichment videos. Don't miss a single one. Again, the address is DrDickSexToyReviews.com. And look for all of my podcasts on iTunes. You'll find me in the podcast section, obviously. And once there, all you have to do is search for Dr. Dick's Sex Advice. And don't forget to subscribe. Leave a comment when you do. Until next week, remember, sex is good, and good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.